Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the sixth day, Yud Ches B'Sivan, Parashas Shlach Lecha, Tavshinayim Vav, the evening of the fifth day, Thursday, 23 June 2016, webcasting from the object of the world's bitter resentment and delusional hatred. The older I get, the more I'm persuaded that anti-Semitism is functionally a real mental disorder just like others. Jew haters hate Jews because they see Jews doing terrible things when they do not. In Brussels today, in the European Union Parliament, Mahmoud Abbas, a sidekick for decades to Yasser Arafat in their demonic Fatah terror cult, said Israel was committing mass murder on a scale never seen before in history. And he ought to know because, as you know, he is a doctor of history, specializing in the Holocaust that never happened. He says Israel is committing mass murder. What is he talking about? Moreover, Israel's presence in Judea and Samaria, he said, is the cause of terrorism worldwide. End the occupation and global terrorism will end. In other words, the guilt for terrorism as seen in Orlando, in San Bernardino, Boston, Paris, Brussels, ultimately it all resides with the Jews. The Jews, not radical Islamists, are the real culprits here for this series of horrors. This man, Mahmoud Abbas, is roughly, I'd say, as insane about Jews as Adolf Hitler. He, too, had a mind teeming with hatred for Jews and their imaginary evil schemes. And this lunacy about us among the Arabs did not begin in 1967, not in 1947, not in 1917. The Jews are a significant presence in the Quran and are looked upon in that book as public enemy number one. A believer's greatest enemy is the Jews. This Arab murderer today, in a suit and tie in Brussels, addressed the European Union's parliament and said, "Palestine and the Palestinian people are experiencing mass murder of historic proportions and attacks the likes of which have never been seen or heard of by the international community. The settlers and army have a continuing tendency towards violence and extremism that is growing worse," he said. Thus he said, Mahmoud Abbas today, whose Arab boys these last few months have been pouncing on defenseless Jews to slash their throats and stab us to death. Dozens of us have been murdered. Hundreds have been wounded, gone into shock. And here is this Hitlerian delusionist accusing us, settlers and army, of running amok and committing mass murder. And not for the first time I say that with a man like this, Israel must not deal. He must be exposed for the enemy of civilization that he is. He also was reported to have called Israel's policies fascist and even cited Aaron Ehud Barak as an authority on the subject. Maybe if we survive the remaining months of Obama in the White House and Donald Trump becomes president, we can begin to rock the boat and start to put to its eternal sleep the delusional Oslo peace process. Anti-Semites like Abbas are definitely delusional in their warped perception of Jews, but they're not alone. Balin Perez Rabin, the Jewish left, they're all delusional, no less, in judging Arafat and Abbas and their friends in Fatah as moderates who wanted peace and statehood just like the Jews, like the Israelis. Palestinian identity is nothing but a phantom identity of no substance. It is a shame that Israel's foreign ministry does not publicize and even ridicule the opening recently in Ramallah of the Museum of Palestine, whose every room and gallery is empty. And then, of course, during the day today, a potential meeting in Brussels between Israeli President Reuven Rivlin and Abbas was talked of, since they were both there on the same day, both to address the parliament. But in the end, Abbas refused to meet with him. Ever the indignant victim of Israeli racism and fascism, Abbas has nothing to talk about with Israelis except giving back what they stole. So how did it happen that Israel, the people of the book, the most literate of peoples, lost control of the language that the world uses to talk about us? In the 1950s and 60s, there was not one UN General Assembly resolution referring to Palestinians, as that proper noun is used today. There was no Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It was the Arab-Israeli conflict, a very different construction of the reality here. The return of the Jewish people, though, to ruling in Holy Jerusalem in 1967, for the first time since 63 BCE, shocked the world. For 2,000 years, Christians denied citizenship to Jews everywhere. The Jews lived on sufferance, and that was because they had killed God and were punished by the loss of their country. Like Cain, they became wanderers as their ancient homeland became a barren wasteland. The Jews were not supposed to return, according to Christianity, until the Second Coming. But here they were. Yeah, God punished them by driving them into exile for 2,000 years, the same God, though, who also promised never to completely abandon them, and in time would bring them back home. And here were the Jews again, ruling in Jerusalem. After over a century of land reclamation, reforestation, the creation of farmland out of desert, and lots of fighting and dying. And their return made a lot of people uncomfortable. When Israel survived, the Arabs publicly proclaimed war to destroy Israel in 1967, after the Arabs had failed to do that in 1948. And Israel emerged triumphant and covered in glory. Much of the civilized, free, and democratic West applauded. There were no anguished cries anywhere that June, declaring that Israel had, by driving out the Arab Legion, stolen Palestine from the Palestinians. Not one voice at the UN. No op-eds. Israel was covered in glory, and another 3 years of history would have to pass before the first UN General Assembly resolution referenced a Palestinian people. And that was tantamount to rewriting history on a par with Holocaust denial. Not only does Mahmoud Abbas deny the Holocaust, he believes in the existence of a Palestinian people in history that never was. Israel's victory in 6 days in June 1967 was lauded at the time by liberals on the left. A mere 22 years had passed since the gates of Auschwitz were flung open and the horror inside revealed. So the West wanted to see no Holocaust too, as the Arabs wanted. Israel was right to defend itself, and its presence in Judea and Samaria, starting in mid-June 1967, was completely kosher. And there's not been one day since then when Israel's presence in Judea and Samaria has been less kosher. What has changed is the narrative. Edward Said's favorite word. That has completely revised what happened in 1967, which makes our presence here very different in the eyes of the world. The birth of the phantom Palestinians, in effect, has recapitulated the very birth of Islam. That was the theft of Judaism and the rewriting of the Torah, more to the liking of the Ishmaelites. Islam was the theft of Judaism, and Palestinian nationalism is the theft of Zionism, the national liberation movement of the Jewish people struggling to liberate their ancient homeland from non-Jews. Well, that is the Palestinian national story, too. Just like the Jews, the Palestinians consider Judea and Samaria their ancient homeland, and they have the superior claim. Abba said in Brussels today that, quote, Israel must end its control of our home country, and that Israel has allowed this to happen and played along and even abetted this monstrous perversion of history on a par with pretense of a Palestinian people entitled to an independent rule in the middle of the land of Israel. This is basically what the two-state solution is all about. This is what the European Union wants, what the Quartet wants, the UN wants. The expulsion of 500,000 Jews from their homes that would be handed over to the so-called Palestinians, who would have 100% sovereign rule over a state perfectly cleansed of all Jews. That is what the two-state solution would mean in practice. The two-state solution is this generation's anti-Semitic fantasy of expulsion, all gussied up since the Holocaust in this verbal finery. But it still would mean, in practice, an expulsion of Jews from their homes of historic proportions to match the other great ones in Jewish history. The two-state solution is this generation's kosher way of Jew hatred in disguise. ובמידה שתתחברו יחד
במידה זו גם השם, במידה זו גם השם אליכם יתחבר להיות אחד. במידה זו גם השם, במידה זו גם השם, במידה זו גם השם. תתחברו יחד זה אל זה באהבה, ובמידה שתתחברו יחד זה אל זה באהבה, ותצמדנה נפשותיכם להיות אחת ממש, להיות אחת ממש. במידה זו גם השם, במידה זו גם השם, במידה זו גם השם אליכם יתחבר להיות אחד. במידה זו גם השם, במידה זו גם השם, במידה זו גם השם אליכם יתחבר להיות אחד ממש.
So there today in Brussels in the EU Parliament was this generation's respectable anti-Semite, spreading delusions of demon Jews and their evil schemes, as in the UK today, the people were to vote yay or nay on Europe. And if they vote yay on Europe, they will die. It will be a vote for the shedding of one's own British, one's own English identity, to the lords of Europe in the EU bureaucracy. I hope they don't. Then again, the history of mankind is the history of the rise and fall and extinction of peoples, except for the Jews, the eternal people, the eternal evidence of the existence of God and his presence in the world. And it looks as if the Europeans are now on the way out. Their churches stand empty. They recoil from nationalism in the memory of the two great wars last century that destroyed the continent. They rightly want no more of that. A vote in the UK for Europe is a vote against a separate British identity. That's suicide, but that may be part of history. Empires and cultures, like the individual human being, have a lifespan. They are born, they grow, they mature, they decline, they decay, and die. I think that about the U.S. too, maybe these days this is true. When the polls show that half the electorate is ready to vote for Hillary Clinton as president, this is a sign of possibly a terminal illness, spiritually speaking. If that is an accurate reflection of the American people's political judgment, America is in big trouble. Everything that is known about this woman broadcasts the message that she is 100% unfit to become the next president of the United States. Donald Trump said yesterday, finally sounding presidential, that she was probably the most corrupt person ever to run for the presidency. He brought up her foundation, the double dealing as Secretary of State and foundation head. I think this woman is less intentionally evil. They're not very wise. She has a very defective sense of what's right and what's wrong. And either she is a deliberate traitor who set up her email server in order to allow enemy peoples to get into it, or she is an incompetent with no sense of the security breach that she created. No awareness of the danger to the United States. Either way, either deliberate sabotage or utter incompetence, she has proven herself to be unfit for command. I mean, what awards, citations, medals did she ever win that advertise her qualifications for the job of Commander-in-Chief of the United States Armed Forces? What was it about her management of the crisis in Benghazi on 9/11/2012 that speaks well of her leadership qualities when U.S. personnel were literally under fire and were killed? That anyone wants to see her as president, I find shocking. People aren't thinking. They would vote for her because they want to see a woman as president? Okay, but she, no less than any man, should have earned the position, and she has not. I'll vote for a woman, an American Maggie Thatcher, a Golda Meir, I don't care, but she has got to have, as Tom Wolfe said of the first astronauts, the right stuff, and Hillary doesn't. I find this diseased state of mind in half the American electorate problematic and worrisome, in the same way that too many Brits are ready to give up their British identity. Whatever that is, after the last of the empire was evacuated in 1967. It has also infected this malaise, a significant percentage of Israelis of Jewish extraction who don't live Jewish lives. The liberals, the left, the new lefty leadership of the Jerusalem Post. The solution to national problems, they seem to believe, is to shed one's national identity and mix and mingle with the other. And of course, the enlightened insist that Israel has to surrender Judea and Samaria. The Jews' sentimental attachment to biblical locales must give way to the Palestinians, who regard these hills as their ancient homeland. And Israel must respect that if it wants peace. This now dreadful Jerusalem Post is featuring more and more J Street opinionators. And that's because the current editors are so de-Judaized. For them, being Israeli means, just like all Americans and European Gentiles in every which way. A couple of weeks ago, J Post let the head of J Street, the very bent out of shape Jeremy Ben-Ami, report on a leftist Washington think tank whose latest study says, quote, Israel will never agree to a two-state solution unless their security concerns are addressed. And it is this language that is symptomatic of Israel's spiritual malaise, its inability to assert its rights as Jews to Judea and Samaria. On the contrary, and by its prime minister's words, Israel recognizes the right of the Palestinians to a state in Judea and Samaria under certain conditions, these security concerns, and that is Israel's self-inflicted wound, to speak that way. This security concerns language covers up the realistic fear of Israelis that there will always be Muslims and Arabs wanting to attack and murder us. So Israel demands the means to defend itself in a peace agreement because Israel will not trust the peace agreement. It's Israel's self-inflicted declaration of its security concerns that does nothing to combat the world historical lies of a Palestinian nationalism and its bogus claim to our historic homeland. The Palestine Mandate explicitly states, quote, whereas recognition has thereby been given to the historical connection of the Jewish people with Palestine and to the grounds for reconstituting their national home in that country, close quote. But Israel has never, ever stood up to the Arabs and the world, waving a flag of Palestine, as it's known today, to say, no, this is the land of the Jewish people. The Jewish people only are historically connected to it, and no other people has a legitimate claim to it like the Jews. Israel has never done that. Instead, Israel has allowed the world to frame our fight for survival as our resistance to doing right by the victims of our movement of national liberation. The Muslims in Algeria had a right to drive out non-Muslim European colonists from their country, but the Jews have no right to liberate themselves from foreigners, namely Arab Muslims. This is the rightness of the two-state solution, you know. Justice for the victims of the Jews' Zionist movement. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. I hope you all saw how on Monday of this week at a Washington Institute for Near East Policy event, former Secretary of Defense for 19 months under Obama, 2011-2013, Leon Panetta, confirmed what Jeffrey Goldberg wrote about him last March in The Atlantic, that Obama once complained to him about having to, when relating to arms sales to Arab countries, ensure that Israel maintained military superiority. Obama didn't like that. He saw it as an obstruction, and he wanted to know why the U.S. had to do that. Panetta explained, first of all, it was written into law. And there you have it, what yours truly has sensed from day one. From this man. He is a Muslim who, like all of them, chafe at the reality that Israel has been strong enough to keep defending itself. It's wrong that Israel has atomic bombs and the Arabs don't. Why is it, a Muslim like him wants to know, can the U.S. and Russia and China and India and France, England, all have bombs? Israel too, but not the Arabs, not the Muslims, not the Iranians? Is this racism? Is this Islamophobia? Why can't the Iranians have bombs? I've always thought that his preference for Iran over the Saudis has been pure practicality. They are much closer to having a bomb to threaten Israel and maybe even use it, God forbid. And for sure, last summer, After 6.5 years in office, Obama had his greatest foreign policy success, getting the Congress to let him send $150 billion to the Iranians and to allow them to build an atomic bomb, if not right away. This has been his dream, his goal, for like Louis Farrakhan, he is a dyed-in-the-wool anti-Jew. He has manifested his affection and even loyalty to the religion of his boyhood in Indonesia, where his skin color surely was not an issue. Islam is a variety of anti-Semitism, and that's even more essential in Islam, I think, than in the evolution of Christian dogma. When Obama addressed his audience in Al-Azhar, home base for the doctrines of militant Islam, and greeted his audience with Salamu Alaikum, he got a big cheer. And he knew he would, because his pronunciation was good, and his affect, the expression on his face, conveyed the subtext, I'm one of you, I'm with you. Hence the cheer. Al-Hazza was where all the famous Muslim terrorists of the last century came to learn. This is who this man is. He's a Muslim in his heart, who has been pushing the Muslim cause since his first day in office. Hence, no linking of terrorism and Islam in any official document in his time. His purpose has been clear, to defend Islam every time a Muslim murders people in the name of Islam. He will insist that Islam has nothing to do with it. I'm afraid he remains, like his Kenyan father, reported to have Saudi roots, and his Javanese stepfather, another Muslim. He remains a Muslim in his heart and soul, and therefore he is an anti-Jew, because Islam is a form of anti-Jew thinking and emotion. For over 7 years now, people have been grumbling that Obama's inability to name the enemy. But no less for 7 years, there has not been one person of influence to stand up and say, I accuse Obama of being functionally an agent of Islam, and as such he must be removed from office. No American has dared do this. That John Hancock defiantly signed the Declaration of Independence with a great flourish in the knowledge that if arrested he could be put to death. Nathan Hale, Patrick Henry, Davy Crockett, all of them gave their lives for America, but now not one politician has dared speak the truth about this man. Like the Brits and other Europeans whose identity is disintegrating, so I'm afraid it's happening in America too.
אגיל ואשמח בי לבבי בראותי כי מאויבי תריב ריבי ולציון גואל תביא איש צמח תצמיח אליהו הנביא ומלך המשיח לכן בעמים יחד תיפול אימה ואפחד
ליבם נפחד, ליבם נפחד
את ילגו יחד ואורחותיו יצליח אליהו הנביא ומלך המשיח עוד ממזרח למערב יאור לעשות הרג רב פרם פרב לערוך מלחמה וקרב על אויביו יצליח אליהו הנביא ומלך המשיח זה דין מלכי אדמה יתו נפיש בקדמה משמע ודומה נוסו נגמה בימה אשר אתכם יבריח אליהו הנביא ומלך המשיח
אנו כל עוברי אורח, הנה ענה אזרח, אור זרח, 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 קנה כף תורה ורח, הציון יפיח.
אליהו הנביא ומלך
המשיח
Okay, that's it for this Thursday night and for this week, and I'll be back, God willing, after the Holy Sabbath. Until then, Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Eretz HaKodesh.